issue we started talking about yesterday is the question of what we believe was the central framing question in the whole sugya. Is what does the phrase Shemeya Ka'ona mean? Does it mean that we're comparing the verbs, Shemeya is Ka'aniya, or does it mean that we're comparing people that HaShemeya is Ka'ona, the one listening is like the one doing the talking? And we mentioned yesterday a couple of major nafkaminas of this question, but they fall into basically two categories. One being the question of, does Shemeya Ka'ona limit itself only to actual speech, or does it include everything else that would come along with that act of speech, if the mitzvah is primarily a speech mitzvah? And we went through a whole back and forth about that, all the details, but that's the major meta issue. And the other major ramification of that is, what if speech is a problem? Let's say it's a hefsek, for example. So according to Rashi, it doesn't matter, because Shemeya Ka'ona doesn't mean it's like you're speaking. It means you are joined in with the speaker. While Tosus would object, because Tosus does object, because apparently they see it as literally like speaking, and therefore if it's a problem to speak, it's a problem for Shemeya Ka'ona. So essentially, two types of halachic nafkaminas that come out of that question. Do you see the phrase to mean that listening is like the act of speaking? You are halachically considered to be talking if you're listening? Or is it, no, you're not talking, you are joining in with the mitzvah of somebody else who is speaking and fulfilling the mitzvah through him? So to take that question now to a different level, it would seem that this also addresses or connects to another question. What is the operating system of Shemeya Ka'ona? How is it that Shemeya Ka'ona works? What's the active ingredient in Shemeya Ka'ona? And let's assume for a second that Shemeya Ka'ona means that it works off of some other existing halachic concept. That there is something else in halacha that drives it. So what is it that gives Shemeya Ka'ona its power? So we considered two candidates, and ultimately we thought that the second candidate was closer to being right, but maybe it's a little bit of a hybrid or a modification of the second candidate. But that they all have some expression here. The first candidate is Hirur Kedibur. It's a sugi in the Gemara Masachas Brachos on Daf Chaf, that at least according to some opinions in the Gemara, there is a notion of Hirur Kedibur, that somebody who's not able to speak, for whatever reason, let's say he's Tame, somebody who can't say words of Kedusha, can actively think the words, and through that he will have the halachic status of someone who's speaking. So could we say, all right, so that's what's going on here. You have Hirur Kedibur. So since that principle exists, if you listen to somebody else talking, you're thinking about the words as you're hearing them, and therefore that works through that mechanism, through Hirur Kedibur. And that, if that were the accepted theory, so then that would fit in with the possibility of comparing verbs. Just like Hirur is like Dibur, so maybe Shomeya is a form of Hirur, and therefore it's also like Dibur, and we're comparing the act of listening to the act of speaking. And when halacha requires us to speak, listening is also a way of doing it. So that was a possibility, and would probably line up with what we saw yesterday, the Beis Halevi, the Yaakov Emden, and Tosfos. But the problems are a few. First of all, a problem that many of the guys in the shir suggested, which is possible, is why do we think that listening is as good as hearer? Hearer is a more active process when you are generating the words inside your own mind. And why should we assume, just because you're listening to somebody else say the words, that that's on the same level? Many of you suggested you could see a distinction between those two, and that's a valid point to make. Another point to make is that hearer kedivor is not unanimous. Not everyone agrees with the principle of Hirur Kedibur. And Shemeya Ka'ona, we've never come across anyone in the history of halacha who disagrees with the principle of Shemeya Ka'ona. So it's difficult to say that Shemeya Ka'ona, a unanimous principle, is contingent on something which is not so unanimous. So that's itself a hard position to maintain. And third of all, there is a major requirement in Shemeya Ka'ona, which is definitely worthy of attention, is that we know that in order for Shemeya Ka'ona to work, the person who's doing the actual speaking has to be chayiv in the mitzvah, and at least to the extent that the one listening. So if the person who's listening is looking to fulfill a mitzvah daraisa, and the one speaking is only chayiv d'rabbanan, that's not good enough. We know that we have this din, you have to be a mechuyiv bedavar, in order to be motzi someone else. And then, parenthetically, the whole chiddush of arvus, the idea that you can fulfill, we can, let's say, make chiddush a second time for someone, or read the Megillah in the nursing home, even though you've heard the Megillah in the morning, that's a chiddush on top of this din. Because you would say, if you have to be mechuyev bedavar, you're not mechuyev to do the mitzvah twice. So if you already made kiddush once, you're not mechuyev to make kiddush again. So how can I go home and make kiddush for my wife? How can I go to the nursing home and read the Megillah for the people there? If I already heard the Megillah, I'm not mechuyev bedavar, I'm disqualified. So the halacha of Arvus says that no, because you're responsible for all the other Jews, if they need you, it's as if you're still mechuyev. So you have to be at least theoretically mechuyev bedavar. And if you are, the fact that you don't actually have to do it again, because you were yotzei, that doesn't stop you. Jonathan?
I don't want to digress too much to Arvus, but how come you can't say, let's say with Arvus, that if someone doesn't know benching very well and you had a sandwich last week, that you can't bench?
Oh, okay. So that, the Gemara says, that's the explicit Gemara Masechet Rosh Hashanah and Daf Chav Tes. The Gemara says that the principle of Arvus only applies by Berachas HaMitzvos. It doesn't apply by Berachas HaNenin. So if you want a piece of cake and somebody else is not eating cake, so then they can't make a mezonos for you. But if they did a mitzvah already, they can make a second mitzvah bracha for you. And then because of that distinction, so the Gemara, just to illustrate it, the Gemara raises a question over there in Rosh Hashanah, what should the story be with Bori Pri HaGafen of Kiddush and Hamotzi of Matzah, which are both ostensibly Berachas HaNenin, but they are connected to mitzvah, so does that take on a different status? That's a whole story. It is a little bit of a digression, but it just illustrates that difference. So, but and all we need to know for Arvus, for our purposes, it just explains that you have to be mechuyev bedavar, but if you already did the mitzvah, it doesn't take away from your being mechuyev bedavar. You're technically mechuyev. The fact you don't have to do it twice doesn't take away from that. But you could ask the question that if hirur kedibur is really what the principle is, so why Shemayah Kahomer operates off of, so then why should we have this requirement? Why do I care who I'm listening to? I could be listening to anybody. If the whole point of Shemei Kahone is that it provokes thoughts of the text of the bracha, so then I'll play off a tape recorder. Why should I have to listen to a mechuyev bedavar? Why should we care? And it's explicit in the Gemara that we care. That for sure is it appears in Shas, you have to be mechuyev bedavar. But also specifically the Gemara in Brachos, Nafchaf and Mibes, so Rabbi Kivi Eger raises the question, Tari Evan raises this question in Megillah also. But there the Gemara says in Brachos that the Gemara wants to know whether or not women are chayavos in benching min haTorah. It's a fascinating question because this is a very important, very common mitzvah, and it's still a little bit of an unresolved question, whether or not women are chayavos in benching min haTorah, believe it or not. And what's also surprising is the Gemara asks, l'may nafkamina, why do we care? So normally you say, why do we care? We ask these questions all the time, whether something is deraisa or derabbanan. And it makes all kinds of differences. And one of the differences we use, the most common difference we usually suggest, is the situation of suffix. A person is not sure if he had to bench, if he has to bench now, if he benched already. So if it's a Dimin HaTorah, we'll make you bench again. If it's the Rabbanan, we won't. So for some reason, that's not what the Gemara says in Brachos. The Gemara says, what's the nafkamina of whether women are chayavos in benching Min HaTorah or Midrabbanan? It's this halacha. Let's say a man wants to listen to his wife, be motzi him in benching. So if she's only chayiv midrabanan, he's chayiv min haTorah, it's not going to work. But if she's chayiv min haTorah, he could listen to her benching and be yotzei that way. So ask Rabbi Akiva Eger, well, what do you mean? Why don't we just say that he'll listen to her benching, and regardless of whether she's chayiv min haTorah, midrabanan, or nothing, but he'll be thinking of the words, hear her kedibur, as he listens, and that should do it. So the question itself illustrates the issue a little bit. Rabbi Akiva Eger's answer, the other answers to the question also, Rabbi Akiva Eger's answer pushes things even farther away from working here, because his answer is that you have to decide what button you want to push. That you're right, if you wanted to push the hearer Kedibor button, it would work. You could listen to her and think of the words, and it wouldn't matter at all whether she's Chayiv Min HaTorah or Midrabanan or not at all. But if he's pushing the Shemei Kahoneh button, and he wants to be Yosei through her benching, so then she has to be Chayiv on the same level as he is. So that's a whole interesting concept, this idea of turning on this button, turning on that button. But it certainly illustrates that, at least according to Akiva Eger's answer and the premise of the question, is that they're not operating even at the same time, let alone through the same method. That Shemei Kahone and Hira Kedibor are clearly different mechanisms. And I think what was pointed out by the guys is also helpful in this, that it's not necessarily the same type of hearer. Hearer, when you generate a thought on your own, is an active process, and you're listening to somebody else, so therefore the words are coming into your head, is not really the same thing. Okay, so here a kedibur might be a candidate. It could be that's the view of those who say that it only works for speech and that it's considered to be like actual speech and considered to be a hefsik, but it's got weaknesses to it. Another strong candidate is shlichus, or a stronger candidate is shlichus, that we know that we have an existence of a concept in halacha where I can have someone else do a mitzvah on my behalf, and he does the work and I get the mitzvah. So why don't we say that that's true here as well, that that's what Shemekon is, he's my shliach, I have him perform the mitzvah and I get the credit for it. So that is compelling in some ways. And I think we mentioned that the Kajig Lava Rav, in his Chuvis, in the Eretz Tzvi, the Kajig Lava Rav, as we discussed, is a, in general, a very creative thinker who was a student of the Avnei Nezer. And part of the style of the Avnei Nezer is about finding these comparisons of different areas of halacha and seeing how they share a common yisod. And the Kajig Lava, as one of his students, took this even further. He's very into drawing strong comparisons between different areas of halacha. So he understood Shemei Ka'ona is literally shlichus. And he said, yes, sir. It's in the Sefer Shliach HaSada, and that's the third chalik of the printed Eretz Tzvi. The Tshuva is called Eretz Tzvi, not to be confused with Eretz HaTzvi. So in the Shliach HaSada, he's got an essay called Shar Birchos Hashem. It's in that essay. So the Kajig Lava Rav, he believes that it's literally shlichus, and he wants to explain in a little bit of maybe a forced way, a very creative way, how a number of halachas in Shemei Ka'ona could be explained by just plugging it in mathematically into a sentence that has shlichus. So, for example, there is a view in Tosfos, which we're not sure if it was totally normative or not, but Tosfos' view in Brachas and Daf Chof Aleph, that it's a hiddur for someone to make a bracha himself, rather than Shemei Ka'ona. So says the Kajig Lava Rav, yeah, mitzvah bo yosum v'shlucha, that we prefer that you do a mitzvah by yourself, rather than have a shliach do it for you. So it makes sense, we'd say the same thing by Shemei Ka'ona. The second example he has over there is there's a view some Rishonim have, that you can't have Shemei Ka'ona for a chatzi bracha, it's all or nothing. Either you make the bracha yourself, or you listen to the other guy's bracha, but you don't do half and half. So says the Kajig Lava, yeah, because there are Rishonim and Gittin who say, ain't shlichus l'chatzi davar. You can't have a halfway shlichus. So too, Shemei Ka'ona shlichus, it can't work halfway. And the third way, which was the most creative, it was really kind of a jump, was that the view of Rashi, who wasn't afraid that it's a hefsek for you to listen to Kaddish and Kedusha when you're in the middle of Shemona Esrei. So says the Kajig Lava, yeah, it's not a problem because ain't shlichus l'dvar avera, to bring us back to the first parak of Obmitzia. Ain't shlichus l'dvar avera, so therefore the shlichus of Shemei Ka'ona will not be credited against you as a hefzik. And we mentioned also the message of the Magid of Mizrich, who had also kind of a Hasidic spin on this whole idea, and he had a Hasidic interpretation of the idea that Gemara says in Kedushin, that if somebody tries to do an avera and is unsuccessful, so we don't hold him liable for it, which would be called mitzaref machshava lemaisa. We wouldn't make a partnership between his intent and the action. We'll say, he didn't do it. But by a mitzvah, we're mitzaref machshava lemaisa, we credit your efforts together with your intent, the actual effort you did with the intent, and it's counted as a mitzvah, but not for an avera. So the mezid shemagid understood machshava, intent, in this sense, like you're thinking about something. So he says, this is a klal you find throughout, that your machshava can work for mitzvahs, but not for averes. So he says, so that's what Tosfos means, that's what Rashi means rather, the Rashi says you can use Shemei Ka'ona to be Yotze, Kaddish and Kedusha, but it won't be the avera of a hefsek, because the machshava doesn't count for a avera, it only counts for a maisa. He says, that's also why the Gemara says in Shabbos, in Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, that even though there are things you can't talk about on Shabbos, but Abu Dover, so says the Gemara, Amira Aser, Hirhur Musar. You can't talk about them, but you can think about them. I, Hirhur Kedibur. No, Hirhur Kedibur, only for mitzvahs, not for avers. Hi.
How does he understand Tosfos again?
How does the he focuses on Rashi. That Tosfos objects to Rashi and says that if Rashi's right, that Shemei Ka'ona is going to work, so it's Ka'ona. So then you're being mafsik. Don't do it. So we've understood Tosfos the whole time as different from Rashi and what Shemei Ka'ona means, that the words are actually like speech. And Rashi says it's not like speech, you're just connected to the person speaking. But the Kashya Glover says in Rashi that he understands it to be shlichus, and therefore shlichus only works for mitzvahs, not for others. So that's similar to what the Magid of Mizrich says, where he also points out that's why hear her on Shabbos could be mutter, and also why we find by tmura. Tmura is a type of hektish, where somebody does an avera by trying to trade an animal that he'd rather lose than the animal he's actually already been makdish. So the Torah says you can't do that, and if you do it, hu tmurasiya kodesh, then they both end up being kodesh, the animal you originally were makdish and the one you tried to trade it for. So we showed him, discussed the fact that tmura is not chal machshava, that normally hektish is chal machshava, you just decide to sanctify an animal, that works, and yet by tmura it's not true. So why should it not be true? It's only hektish, it's a form of hektish. So why should it not work in machshava? So it's the same idea, that hektish normally is a mitzvah, but sinful hektish, tmura, so that's avera, it's not going to work through machshava. So that's all an extension of the Kajib Lover's idea that Shemei HaKohen is literally shlichus in every sense of the word. But as we noted, there are two, at least, difficulties you could raise with calling the shlichus. First of all, if it was really shlichus, I shouldn't even have to be in the room. But if I have a mitzvah that's done with shlichus, I don't have to be there. I could be asleep 1,000 miles away. So then, why should I have to show up in shul and perm to hear the Megillah? I'll have the balkar in my shliach, and I'll stay home. I'll go party. Interesting stuff, like if I could eat that for the first night. So I could have a whole lumbus about that. Second of all, is if it is shlichus, it's also a little bit hard to understand because we know shlichus doesn't work for everything. We know that, for example, you can't take a lulav with shlichus, you can't put on tefillin with shlichus. We know that shlichus is limited to mitzvos that are not in the category that Tosfos Rid calls mitzvah shebegufo. If you're supposed to do the mitzvah with your body, so then you can't have somebody else's body do it. If the mitzvah is about bringing about some kind of result, so then you can have someone else bring out the results, bring about the result on your behalf. But if the mitzvah is about doing something physically, there's no shlichus. So doesn't it sound like a mitzvah of speech is really a physical mitzvah? Is that really something that you could have somebody else do on your behalf? So we noted that some achronim say, very creative hesber, it sounds very lovish, but the truth is it may be very much the truth, that perhaps when you have a mitzvah of speech, there's really two parts. That really the goal, let's say for example Kiddush, it's especially amenable to this explanation. When it comes to Kiddush, so what does the Torah say? How do we know we have to make Kiddush? The Torah says, Zachar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadshah. You should remember Shabbos. So we understand that chiyuv of remembering to mean that we should say the words of Kiddush. But maybe what we're really interested in is that we should hear the words of Kiddush. That's what makes us remember. So we need to say the words in order to hear our ears, for our ears to hear the voice saying them. So really we're interested in hearing, thinking about the words of Kiddush. But we need to say them for that to happen. So we break it down into two parts. The mitzvah of saying Kiddush really means we should hear ourselves saying Kiddush. Therefore we have to say it so we could do that. So maybe when it comes to Shemei HaKohanah, we break things down into its parts. That the listening, that's the mitzvah shebegufo, that we're really going to have to do ourselves. But the saying of the words, so that we'll hear them, that we could farm out to someone else. That we could essentially do through shlichus. So maybe when we say that Shemei HaKohanah works through shlichus, we really mean that the speech part is done through shlichus, because that's a result-oriented mitzvah. There's no real mitzvah to speak the words. The mitzvah is to have the words said so that you can hear them. So you could have someone else bring about that result. And in terms of not having to be there, so you're right. So for the shlichus part, you wouldn't have to be there. But if you're not going to be there, then you're not going to hear it. You have to also hear it. So that, technically speaking, you're going to need to be present so that you can hear the words being said. Right?
That wouldn't qualify as shlichus for like chatziah.
Right. So this is two separate components of it. Shlichus chatziah davar, which only some Rishonim were worried about, it would mean that for a bracha, you'll, or for whatever mission, you'll do half, you'll go half the way, and then the other way, you'll...
So this isn't considered half? No,
you're... Right. This is two parts. This is two different tracks. So these two different parts of the job could be done separately. But in case of a chatzi bracha, for example, it means you're going to hear half a bracha through somebody else, and the other half you'll say yourself. Hi.
Just re-clarify that you need to say it in order for it to be in your head?
Right. That really the goal of a mitzvah, let's say Kiddush, for example, the Torah never uses the word speak, especially in an example like that. The Torah says remember. So we understand that we remember Shabbos through reciting Kiddush. But what's the real goal? The real goal is that we should be remembering Shabbos. So we need to really hear the words of Kiddush. In order to make ourselves hear the words of Kiddush, we'll have to say them, so we'll be thinking about them. But maybe that part we could have somebody else do it. We could have somebody else say it, and we could listen to them, and that'll be just as good.
Or read it.
Maybe reading it could also work, and that's also a discussion. I mean, it's not an impossibility, but since we assume the halacha that it has to be verbalized, but maybe verbalizing could be done by somebody else, as long as you end up hearing it. And maybe that's what Shemekon means. Maybe that's what the whole principle actually tells us. So Shlichus has a few issues, but maybe those issues could be addressed. And maybe Shlichus is a little bit of a better model for Shomea Kaone, especially because it does address some of the questions we had with Yerik and terms of some of the bigger issues. Shlichus is a unanimous principle and doesn't have some of the glaring questions with Yerik, but also it explains the need for a mechuyev b'davar. It's the same requirement we have by shlichus. We know that shlichus for mitzvahs only works if the person who's the shliach is chayev in the mitzvah too. So it's the same requirement. The person who's reciting the bracha has to be mechuyev b'davar. Now this whole model all fits in with our second possibility that hashomeya is keha'one, that we're not linking actions, we're linking people. That the person who's listening to this bracha is fulfilling the mitzvah with the one making the bracha, and therefore he fulfills all the details that he's doing. That was the set of issues. And it's not as if he's actually speaking. And now this point as well, it's more of a shlichus kind of model. Shlichus is where you are connecting to somebody else doing a mitzvah, while the first model that compares actions is more of a hiher kedibur kind of model. So we're more likely, they both have bases apparently in the Rishonim and the Achronim, seems to be a little bit more tilted towards the second one, that Shlichus is probably the model, or as some, like the Chassam Sofer, have suggested, something like Shlichus, especially, you don't have to say it's exactly one or the other, Shemei Kaona has its own Makoros, as we mentioned yesterday, so it could be its own din, but maybe, as some explained it, the language you find is, it's a Hitzdarfus, Ke'en Shlichus, that it's a partnership with somebody else that is parallel or similar to Shlichus, has a lot in common with Shlichus, it's a little bit of its own version. Maybe that could also account for these differences, but generally it's something comparable to Shlichus. You're fulfilling the mitzvah through another Mechuyev B'davar who is doing it at the same time. And you join him by listening. So that would be a difference, for example, as opposed to appointing him, you join him by listening to him. Now, the idea that he's got to be mechuyev b'davar also is understood. If you're trying to fulfill the mitzvah through him, you're basically catching a ride with him, so to speak. So you can only catch a ride with somebody who's going as far as you need to go. If a person's going to stop driving halfway there, you're not going to succeed in getting to where you need to go. So if you need to fulfill a mitzvah min ha-Torah, and the person who you're trying to join in with is only fulfilling a mitzvah midrabanan, we could understand why that's not going to help you. You need to be able to have somebody who's doing the mitzvah you're doing. So that's itself an issue. So why were we talking about any of this zman? Because it was then, and it still is now, Sfiras HaOmer. So this was essentially a Sfiras HaOmer topic that had gotten us onto this issue. And there is a whole question about whether or not Shemei Ka'one can be used for Sfiras HaOmer. Now, this question generally is not an issue of whether you can be Yotzei the Bracha. The Bracha, that we generally assume should work for sure, and that comes up all the time, that people who are not sure if they're still holding in Sfira, or they're sure they're not still holding in Sfira, whatever it is, people who want to do the mitzvah of Sfira, but they're not personally able to make the Bracha, a very common scenario, will, if possible, if they're in Shul, let's say, when it's being done, so they'll listen to the bracha being recited and they'll fulfill it that way. So that's not much of a question. Aaron Rishonim yesterday, there is a view in Rishonim that we don't practice where they would put the nusach of the count into the bracha, so if you do it that way, that complicates things, but that's not how we do things today. We have a bracha separate and then the statement of the counting. So the bracha, for sure, you could do with Shemei Kona. The question is the counting itself, which is also a speech-oriented mitzvah, can that be done with Sfira? So that comes up less, that was Shemei Ka'one. That comes up less often, because most people will say, what's the big deal? It's just a sentence, I'll say it. why should we care? But strictly speaking, it is somewhat of a shaila. What's the shaila based on? So the Magen Avraham and others talk about this issue because you have a phrase the Gemara has in the Maseches Menachos that we say, Usfartem Lachem, says the Torah, you should count the Sfira. Sheyehei Sfira l'kol echad v'echad mechem. That the Sfira should be for each of you individually. Now, what does that mean? You could read it, that's what the Magen Avraham is suggesting, that we all have the mitzvah to do Sfira specifically ourselves. Now, you could say that it doesn't mean that at all. You could read the Gemara saying that it's what we just read about the Yovel, this past Shabbos, that sometimes you have a Sfira mitzvah, which is a communal mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of Beis Din to keep track of something. So the Chiddush of Sfira Saomer is that it's not a mitzvah of Beis Din, it's a mitzvah on every individual to do Sfira himself, but not that it's trying to tell you about how you should do it, simply that it's a personal responsibility rather than a communal responsibility. We also, I think, mentioned Bilbabish Rebbe's wild Chiddush, very surprising Chiddush, that Sfira is such a personal mitzvah that if somebody crosses the international date line in the middle of Sfira and he's off track, so he counts his own Sfira, because it's Sfartem Lachem, it doesn't mean keep track of what everyone else is doing, it means keep your own count. And the unbelievable Chiddush, he would keep his own Shavuos. And Shavuos only gets its status from being the end of Sfira HaOmer. You count your own Sfira HaOmer, and you have your own Shavuos, and I'm told that that is actually the accepted Pesach in the Babel.
That sort of makes sense with the Gemara. I think you go with Hayam and Allah, for instance, you should count and then Aseres comes.
Right, so the idea that Sfira is this personal kind of obligation, right, and that Shavuos is a function of that, there is certainly a basis for that, but it's a pretty unbelievable Chiddush l'halacha. We could have people keeping a different Shavuos because they ended up on a different camp. And this is in the Chiddushim Biur Malashas, the Bavitch Rebbe in the first Chelek. It's a pretty unbelievable idea. In any event, so there are different ways to interpret what the Gemara means when it says that the Sfira is personal as opposed to being something else. But there is a suggestion that Magen Avraham and others have, is that maybe it means that you should fulfill the mitzvah yourself instead of doing it through someone else. And maybe you come to the understanding that Shemei Ka'oneh is considered to be like doing it through someone else. So the truth is, what we've seen is that that's really a question. Is that the case? So how do you view a mitzvah that's done through Shemei Ka'oneh? Is it a way of doing it yourself? Is it considered to be a form of speech? So really, even though you're listening to somebody else say the words, it's considered to be you're saying it? Or is it that you are fulfilling the mitzvah through someone else? So whether or not, you could make a case that even Shemei Ka'oneh is not called doing it through somebody else. Even if there is such a kapeda that you have to do Sfira Saomer yourself, maybe that would not be the case here. Hi.
So if according to these opinions, they're saying that the Lecha means it's not supposed to be based in, but goes to Shemei Ka'oneh. So would these opinions go as far as to say that it would be also impossible to do in Arbus if someone needs to say it for you, if let's say they,
So that's actually an interesting question. So the Din Arvus, in terms of if they already Yotzei Sfira, could they do it?
For someone else who kind of can't speak.
Right, but there's a much more interesting application, not to divert your question, but I think we mentioned a much more interesting application of Arvus, that the question was asked, so the question comes up all the time. Let's say the embarrassing situation of the rabbi of the shul forgot to count one night. So he has to count publicly. So is there any heter for him to continue counting with a bracha if others would, in his situation, would not be able to continue counting with a bracha? So there are those who are making for various reasons and say that the bracha of Atal is only the Rabbanan, Kavod Abrius could override it. It's too embarrassing to acknowledge that. There is such an idea in Poskim. First of all, also, just this whole idea of not being able to count if you miss a day is the Bahag. The majority of Rishonim don't have this chumrah. We, in deference to the Bahag, we leave out the bracha if we miss a day. But the other Rishonim didn't have this idea. Right. Rav Schefter always explains that this is a cover for the Bahag, because the minority view, but we hold the Bahag in such esteem, so we defer to his position. But most of Rishonim didn't agree with this. So if it's a makom kavod abrios, it's going to be a bnei zayin to publicly announce that you forgot a day, is even more reason to be makel than you would in other circumstances. There is some discussion about that, about if you, we probably paskin that a bracha levatala, a bracha mitzricha, is a din derabbanan. So there is some significant literature that situations when it's embarrassing not to make a bracha, maybe we should say that we should allow you to make the bracha because of kavod abrios. Apparently this comes up way more often than you guess. But a number of posts from Moshe Feinstein and Rashefa talks about this in the Shabbat somewhere, and then I heard about a couple of real life cases where this happens. I don't know why it always happens this way. But under a chuppah, there's a shayla of maybe the fourth bracha, Sheyotzer as Adam B'Tzalmo, actually includes the third bracha, Yotzer HaAdam. So if somebody messes up and they accidentally make the fourth bracha before the third bracha, so it's a shayla if you can still make the third bracha. So, for some reason, I don't know why after those two get confused, but that's the case they find discussed in Kamal Polskin, that this happened. So, in Nefesh HaRav, he quotes that the Rav allowed all the brachas to be recited, and the issue was that he felt that all the Rabbanim who were going to be honored with the Shabbat brachas were already singled out, and it would have been a bizayin to cut somebody at that point. So then, the question was raised, is he only saying that because Brachas Shin Shvicha is a Drabbanan, and this is a Kavod Abrios outweighing a Drabbanan, or maybe it's even less than that. He's not really sure that it was such a problem to begin with to switch the Brachas, which is more likely. But in any event, there is a literature about this that says that maybe if there's a situation of Kavod Abrios, we could allow a Brachas Shin Shvicha, a Brachas Latala, under that assumption. But the question was also raised that maybe we should say that Arvus works here. Maybe we should say that the rabbi is technically Mechuyev. Sfiras Omer, right? He's not somebody who's putter from Sfiras Omer. But he, so to speak, got knocked out of the game for technical reasons. He can't make a bracha because he's missing a part of the mitzvah in his practice. But if he wants to be mostly somebody else, maybe he can do that. So maybe we should say that Arvus works in that direction. Not just for somebody who already fulfilled the mitzvah, but somebody who is technically mechuyev but is unable to do it himself, then maybe he can still do it for you. It's a fascinating idea. And maybe we could say, therefore, that the rabbi, if he wants to read on behalf of the, he wants to say sphere on behalf of the congregation, can make a bracha under that assumption that he's being motzi the shul. So that's a fascinating discussion. So there are other suggestions within this whole lumdus here, that maybe we should say, based on other points that were raised, that Sfiras Omer can't work through Shemei Kaone. Because maybe, for example, maybe it's more than speech. If you want to say, like the Beis Halevi allegedly said, that it only works for speech itself, so we find that Sfiras Omer is not just simply speech, but it's also an act of counting, which has significance beyond the words. The Salvation explained that way. That's why you can't miss a day, because it's not called counting if you're missing any parts in the middle. The Zvar Avram said that if you count misafek, even if you say the right words, but you're not sure that you're actually counting, it's not called counting. So there is some suggestions, say for the Rashi and Chakarik, again, I don't expect anybody to know these names, just being made with Avraham Hashem Omro. He discusses that maybe, therefore, it shouldn't be subject to Shemei HaKaone for that reason. There are others who also want to suggest that Sfiras Omer is really Al-Pidar HaDrush, but it could be fit into the halachic literature as well, but certainly it's more of a Muslim step, that Sfiras Omer is about counting as the part of the preparation for Kabbalah Satorah, and it means actively growing and marking all the days, so maybe that's not something that can be done through someone else, and that maybe that's akin to what, like Michael was asking me about this morning, about the Vilna Gaon's Chiddush, that Kriya Shema cannot be done with Shemei HaKaone, and he doesn't say why, he just uses that to explain a Gemara, a Mishnah, Misafas Brachos, first Mishnah in Shas, first the second word in Shas. So the position is not explained why, but there are some who say that you can't do Kriya Shema with Shemei HaKaone, because Kriya Shema is not just words. Kriya Shema is the pledge of allegiance to the Jewish people. It's a statement of faith. It means you have to actually do it yourself. You can't rely on somebody else. And so too, Sfiras HaOmer is a process of growth. It's not simply reciting a formula. And that's not something that can be done through others. Okay, I think that was most of what we had addressed about Shemei HaKaone and Sfiras Omer. Any questions about that? All right, so we're... Yes, sir?
Let's say the Pesach Seder, if you have a separate mitzvah of Higata Levincha.
Yeah, that's
that
a lot of big discussions.
Everyone should be reading to themselves always.
So that's a big question, whether or not that works. So it's generally assumed by many that Shemei HaKaone does work, and that since we're all reading them together, and if people take turns reading, that it works that way. There are those who argue, you can see where the basis for all the questions come from. If we were talking about it before Pesach, we could have focused on the Haggadah issues. But you can see, based on all the points that were raised in the context of this discussion, where some of the sfeikas come up in the context of Haggadah. So there is quite a literature. Jolti, for example, has a piece about it, and Mishnah Siyavitz has a lot to be said about it. But I think the prevalent premise is that there is a Shemei HaKaone that's in operation. So Pesach night, you either read all the words of the Haggadah or you hear the Baal HaAseder, to remember where the heck of it.
I also want to say that in regards to, let's say, with the Megillah, we spoke about more last time with the 10 sons of Haman. They have a sort of special Indian for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember also we discussed that the Purim part of his house in the Pachad Yitzhak, there was a Meiri who said that you have a special sort of Indian for Purim. You don't really have Halal because it was everything was in Nes Nisters. Instead, you have the Megillah. So if that's your sort of Halal, you can also say for the Megillah, not necessarily the 10 sons Indian, but because it's sort of a Shevach HaOdah. Therefore,
Shemei Kodah
might be more of a problem there.
But what about the rest of the Haggadah? I'm going to say the rest of the Megillah.
Say the whole Megillah, not the top. We mentioned the 10 sons in
here. Right, nobody, but nobody says that you can't do
right.
Megillah.
Right, I'm saying it's a question of this Meir.
Right, also, but how also we do with Shemei Kodah?
We do?
Well, sort of. I mean, that's the Gemara brings the two together. So it's the whole process of the back and forth and the recitations.
That's, because it's not just reading, though. It's like a Shabbat. It's like a,
right, so it's...
In Megillah, we do this sort of Shabbat.
Right, so it's not clear that we wouldn't do it by Hallel. In Megillah, for sure, we do. So,
right.
It so doesn't seem to enter into this category. Well, it's not just the Miri. The Gemara says that one of the answers in the Gemara is that Kriyasa Zuhalela.
All right.
That, so the Miri had this Chiddush that...
That's why you don't say Hallel.
Right, well, the Gemara seems to say that, but the Miri has this Chiddush that what the Gemara seems to be saying is that there really is a Chiyuv of Hallel on Purim, just that we get out of it by reading the Megillah. So therefore, says the Meiri, if you're on a desert island and there's no Megillah on Purim, you should say Hallel. That's that was his Chiddush based on that. That gets us a little bit far afield. So just in the minutes, that a little more performance art, just to kind of act out what we're holding in. So we have only a few more minutes. We'll have to do most of the poem stuff tomorrow, and I guess we will carry it to Wednesday anyway. But so the sugya we have to start now, so we'll kind of act it out, is haschala, right? The idea that if you start a malacha, so that changes the ability to be chozer. And the Gemara has the statement that holchu, that if a poem already went to the place of work, so then the boss can no longer pull out on them. So what we'll just start to sketch it out. We'll go into the details tomorrow. So there are two broad ways of understanding why that is, and then it breaks down into many more specific parts. But one way is basically Tosos and everybody else. The Tosos, a very, very significant Tosos, probably in the sugyas that we saw, this is probably the most significant Tosos, so I should probably just emphasize it. But out of all these Haskalah, this Tosos and Ayin Vav Amud Beis, many, many sugyas are alluded to in this one short Tosfos. So definitely make sure to be on top of that one. Tosfos on Vav Amud Beis, Ein Lahem Alzeh Ela Tarumas. Very significant Tosfos. So Tosfos basically says here that the whole din of Holchu doesn't mean anything significant. It's all connected to Davar HaAvod, to everything else. That basically it means that normally the two parties could pull out on each other, and there's only Tarumas. There's no factor preventing them from doing that. Unless it's a davar ha'avod, unless there is some type of loss that's now going to be incurred because of what started and what's not finished. So in that context, Tosfos says that's also how you understand holchu. That holchu is a way of saying that once things have started already, so then there's investment and there's going to be a loss. But it doesn't mean anything inherent, and any other type of davar ha'avod is subject to the same rule. And it's all an expression of that. So you have on the one hand that way of looking at things, that there's no actual significance to holchu. And on the other hand, you have almost everybody else who sees holchu as some type of kinyan. So we'll have to go into more details tomorrow. So what do we mean when we say holchu is a kinyan? On the one hand, you could say that it's not any specific kinyan, but you could say that it is a takanas chachamim. That's what it sounds like some Rishonim say. That sounds like the Rashba says this, or the Ritva says this, that basically there is no inherent kinyan that's involved in this process. But Chazal recognized that there is a risk in letting people pull out at any moment, even if otherwise it's there to happen. But if we let people pull out at any point, then it's going to have you're not going to have a functioning employment market, if that's what could happen. People could just pull out on each other even after the work has started. So therefore, it's a kind of sechamen that there shouldn't be that possibility, and we'll treat it like a kinyan, but that there isn't any actual kinyan here. We also saw in that context that the Chiddush Haran and the Book of Yosef say that Amira, the Gemara says in Hashoah, we'll learn later about Metzia, talks about the fact that a person would be Pater if he damages property that he borrowed from his employees. So the Gemara talks about somebody who acquired a worker and an animal at the same time. So the Gemara says, the Bailam Bamira, the Parab Mashiach. He gets the animal by drawing it into him, the Mashiach, and he gets the worker as a worker with Amira. So what does the Amira mean? So that some of the Rishonim say there isn't really a Kenyan here. It's that once there is an Amira, once the boss says, come work for me, the worker says, I'll work for you. So then that becomes an initiation of something, because Sheiris Yisrael Ol Yasu Avla, since they've expressed the commitment to each other, so to speak, that creates something significant, but it's not really a Kenyan other than that. And we saw that the Chelkis Yalav has an explanation. The Gemara later in Bava Metzia, the Gemara has to talk a very difficult Gemara in Daf Kuf Yud. The Gemara says that if, let's say, I ask a Shliach to hire a worker for me, so then the Gemara says that neither I nor my Shliach are subject to the prohibition of Bal Talin, of Losal and Pula Sachir, that neither of us are chayiv for the specific Isra Daraisa of delaying the payment to a worker. So it's hard to understand. Why not? Just because if I had somebody hire a worker for me, clearly my intent is to pay this worker. And clearly we know that if a worker is going to be working on my behalf under the understanding, legitimate understanding, that I'm hiring him, I have to pay him, I owe him the money. So why am I not subject to the issue of Bal Talim? So the Chelkis Yoav explains that, yes, certainly you're chayav to pay the guy. But the issue of Bal Talim Pula Sachir is about the special Sachir relationship, the special Poel relationship. It's a din that is unique to Poelim, to a Sachir. It only exists once there is that connection between the two. And that connection is created by the Amir, is created by the direct speech between the two parties with nobody else in between. So in the case where you use a Shliach to hire the worker, so the Shliach is not the boss, so he's not chayiv for Bal Talin, and the boss isn't chayiv either, because even though he has to pay him, but he's not subject to this unique answer of Bal Talin to Pula Sachir, because he doesn't have the Sachir relationship that was created by this Amir. He says that based on the Ran. You'll remember the Chelkis Yoav is also a student of the Avinezer, and also a proponent of that kind of creative comparative thinking. Okay, so those are some of the initial positions in terms of saying that the Kenyan is really more of a Takanas Chachamim, or a function of Haskala, or something less than an absolute Kenyan. However, there are a number of others who maintain that, this is mostly something you find in the later literature, that there is an actual Kenyan Minat Torah here. So the question is, what is going on that creates a Kenyan Minat Torah? So that we'll have to pick up on tomorrow. Any questions about anything that we've done today? Anything for the past few minutes? Anything from Shemaiah Cohen? Everybody's basically on top of things? Okay, so that's Hashem. We'll continue tomorrow with this, and with the poly-